Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for Wednesday, January 27th on Iris. I'm your reader, Erin. Our first article from the front page, virtual concert set at CL Venue, Surf Ballroom's winter dance party to honor Holly, Valens, and Bopper. Ashley Stewart, Globe Gazette. The Surf Ballroom and Museum will celebrate the lives of the legacies of Buddy Holly, Richie Valens, and JP, known as the Big Bopper Richardson, differently this February. The Holly Rocka Rollas, a Minnesota-based trio that plays high-energy early American rock and roll and rockabilly, will perform a virtual commemorative 2021 winter dance party concert at 8 p.m. on Saturday, February 6. Quote, we simply couldn't let a year pass us by without honoring our three stars, end quote, the Surf Ballroom posted on its Facebook page Monday. The virtual concert falls on what would have been the third and final day of this year's winter dance party in Clear Lake. The Surf Ballroom's board of directors announced the cancellation of the annual event in late December amid the COVID-19 pandemic. The sold-out Don McLean show is scheduled for February 3rd, has also been postponed. The rescheduled date will be announced once it's available. McLean, an American singer-songwriter, memorialized the Holly, Richardson, and Valens plane crash as, quote, the day the music died, end quote, in his 1971 epic hit, quote, American Pie, end quote. Organizers initially planned to host Winter Dance Party, an event that draws hundreds of rock and roll fans from around the world, on February 4th through 6th, the limited capacity and social distancing, but later called it off for the safety of their patrons, volunteers, and staff. The three-day event commemorates the anniversary of the original Winter Dance Party, where rock and roll legends Holly, Richardson, and Valens performed for the last time before they were killed in a plane crash, along with pilot Roger Peterson, on February 3rd, 1959, about 5 miles north of Clear Lake. The Holly Rocka Rollas are no strangers to the Surf Ballroom and the Winter Dance Party. The group was scheduled to perform at the ballroom's first live in-person show in 9 months in December, but due to the coronavirus and subsequent restrictions, the Christmas show was held virtually instead. The Holly Rocka Rollas also played during the former U.S. Interior Secretary David Bernhardt's visit to the venue in October ahead of its recent designation as a National Historic Landmark. The Surf Ballroom is Iowa's 27th National Historic Landmark, joining a list including President Herbert Hoover's birthplace cottage in West Branch and the Iowa Governor's President Terrace and Hill in downtown Des Moines. There are nearly 2,600 National Historic Landmarks in the U.S. National Historic Landmarks are buildings, sites, districts, structures, and objects that have been determined to be nationally significant in American history and culture. Tickets for the virtual winter dance party concert cost $15 and are available at www.surfballroom.com. The winter dance party will return on February 3rd through the 5th, 2022. For information about the winter dance party, visit www.winterdanceparty.surfballroom.com or follow the Surf Ballroom and Museum Facebook page. Our next front page article, Clear Lake OK's $486,000 to buy new sewer truck vehicle to replace city's 14-year-old one, by Ashley Stewart, Globe Gazette. The city of Clear Lake hopes a new piece of equipment will better and more efficiently maintain its sewers and respond to emergencies. The Clear Lake City Council unanimously approved the purchase of a 2020 Vactor 21001 PD combination sewer truck for $486,411 from McQueen Equipment in of St. Paul, Minnesota at its January 18th meeting. Quote, it's a great piece of equipment, and as Jeremy mentioned, just constantly in use to protect our lake and keep our plumbing working correctly, end quote, said Mike Callanan, Clear Lake City Councilman. The council's action came nearly a month after it authorized the issuance of request for proposals to replace the city's 2006 Camel sewer cleaning truck. Proposals were due on January 5th, and the city received five from four vendors. Interim Public Works Director Jeremy Kornenberg presented the two proposals city staff felt met or exceeded all the items on its request for proposals to the city council. The request for proposals was prepared by Kornenberg and Rodney Hag, city mechanic and fleet manager, after spending several months researching and testing out newer sewer cleaning trucks. The first proposal from McQueen Equipment, including extended warranties, cost $486,411 with a trade-in value of $30,000 for the old truck. It also includes a rapid deployment boom, a magnetic boom manhole lifter, and a 15-yard debris tank, quote, no-brainer add-ons, end quote, that will make the department's work safer and more efficient. Kornberger said, quote, it's kind of a game changer there and allows us to get a lot more work done in a shorter amount of time, end quote, he said. The second proposal from Mid-Iowa Solid Waste Equipment Company Incorporated of Johnston for a 2021 Sewer Equipment 900 ECO combination sewer cleaner, including extended warranties, cost $462,477 with a trade-in value of $40,270 for its 2006 truck. Kornberg said, although Mid-Iowa Solid Waste Equipment's proposal cost less than McQueen's, it was offering a, quote, basic machine, end quote, with, quote, a lot less frills to it, end quote. Plus, it was louder. Quote, things just didn't stand up to the Vactor stuff, end quote, he said. City staff tested out McQueen's and Mid-Iowa's machines, and McQueen's was preferred. A sewer cleaning truck features a pump and a tank. The pump is designed to pneumatically suck liquids, sludges, slurries, or the like from the location into the tank of the truck. It's primarily used for two functions, maintenance and responding to emergency overflows. Maintenance includes cleaning underground utility pipes, manholes, wet walls, storm drains, inlets, and miscellaneous debris removal as needed. Kornberg said the city has done business with McQueen Equipment in the past. The company was formerly known as Trans-Iowa Equipment, which was started in Clear Lake. The city of Clear Lake purchased street sweeper and snow blowers from them. Quote, the service and parts departments have provided excellent service over the years, end quote, he said. McQueen Equipment has locations in St. Paul, Ankeny, so the city can have its equipment serviced at either. The truck will be delivered in mid to late February, well ahead of its heavy use in the spring, summer, and fall, Kornberg said. For the purchase agreement, city staff will receive 2 full days of on-site user training from McQueen and 1 full day of mechanical training from Vector. Flory said the city budgeted $310,000 to replace a motor grader in fiscal year 2021, and with the new sewer cleaning truck costing more than that, it will use its reserves to pay the difference. The purchase of a motor grader will be delayed until at least fiscal year 2022. Our last front page article, drainage district plans halted, improvements that could cost up to $1,100 per acre voted down by Jared McNett, Globe Gazette. The difference a month can make. In mid-December, landowners in Cerro Gordo County's Drainage District 62, which occupies land around the Avenue of the Saints in Mason City, were concerned they would not be able to gather enough people together to vote down improvement plans in the area that would be assessed to them. At a Cerro Gordo County Board of Supervisors meeting that week, the landowners were 2 votes shy of what they needed. The landowners had a month to find those 2 votes or could expect to see their assessments get to as much as $1,100 per acre. A month later, the landowners within the district had found 2 more people to vote against the improvements. To actually defeat the improvement plans, the landowners needed a majority of landowners in the area who own a total of 70% of the land within the drainage district to meet what's called, quote, remonstrance, end quote. At the December meeting, only the percent of land threshold had been met. During the Tuesday morning meeting, Rode shared that 15 of the 24 landowners in the district objected to the plan. Quote, that remonstrance hasn't been met and the proposed project should not take place, end quote, Rode said. Despite the improvement plans being defeated, Rode did recommend that the supervisors consider a reclassification of the district. When District 2 Supervisor Casey Callanan asked what the pros and cons would be, Rode shared that reclassifications would mean that, quote, landowners would only pay for repairs on the portion of the facility that they actually benefit from, end quote. Along with the potential reclassification, Rhodes said that 6 acres of land could also be brought into the district. With the discussion, there were at least two issues at hand: the recognition that the district is over 100 years old and hasn't been improved since the 1960s, and that Bushel Boy, a tomato grower out of Ottonwa, Minnesota, broke ground on $35 million agriculture facilities that rest entirely within Drainage District 62. The engineering firm Bolton & Menk did a topographic study of the district in June 2020 and found that the Bushel Boy site had changed the manner of water flow in the area. During the December meeting, officials from Bushel Boy disputed that findings by saying that, quote, "We're not here with the intent or the belief that we have caused this issue," end quote. However, the finding presented by Bolton and Menk's Kent Road was enough to influence other landowners in the district to say, as a Gary Sutcliffe did, quote, "We didn't have a problem before Bushel Boy came, and now we've got a problem," end quote. On page 2, Iowa House Child Care Bill Moves Forward by James Q. Lynch, special to the Globe Gazette. Bills to expand child care opportunities advanced in the Iowa legislature on Monday, but a lawmaker involved in the business warned that the proposals may not go far enough to solve the state's shortage of providers and staffing. House File 1, which would double the maximum net income threshold for the Iowa Child Independent Care Credit and Early Childhood Development Tax Credit from $45,000 a year to $90,000 a year, was approved 24-0 by the House Ways and Means Committee. It's part of a package of bills House Republicans are including in their push to address workforce issues. Iowa has more households with all parents working than any other state, so the lack of child care opportunities is seen as impediment to meeting the state's labor force needs. In the past 5 years, the state has lost 33% of its child care businesses and needs an additional 350,000 child care slots for children younger than 12, according to Governor Kim Reynolds' office. On top of that, the governor's office says that nearly a quarter of children live in areas with a shortage of providers. The problem has worsened during the coronavirus pandemic. According to the Linn County Community Child Care Supporters Team, during COVID-19, the county has lost 24 regulated child care programs, 20 registered child development homes, and 4 licensed centers. That is an overall loss of 385 child care slots, said Representative Tracy Elhert, Democrat of Cedar Rapids, who works in the child care industry. Also Monday, HF3, which would make incentives from the high quality jobs programs available for the development of child care facilities, was advanced to the full Economic Growth Committee. Representative Jacob Bossman, Republican of Sioux City, explained that much like the state officers and incentives for infrastructure such as natural gas, water, sewer, and roads for developments, expanding the high-quality jobs incentives would help attract an adequate workforce to a new development or expansion. Businesses could qualify for tax credits if they develop or expand child care facilities for their employees if the project creates or retains jobs that meet a state wage threshold. In awarding incentives, the state must consider the economic impact, including placing greater emphasis on economically distressed areas, facilities that will care for 20 or more children, and whether there are adequate child care facilities in the area. Lobbyists who spoke on the bill offered generally favorable comments on what one described as Bossman's, quote, "holistic approach," end quote, to addressing workforce child care issues. All 3 subcommittee members signed off on the bill to send it to the full committee. Although encouraged by efforts to address child care issues, Elhert said the bills might not accomplish as much as their titles would suggest. Quote, "There are quite a few bills that have the word child care in them and are related to child care, but for the everyday person who doesn't fully understand these bills or understand the profession, it's going to look like we're doing a lot of great things for child care when we're really still falling short," end quote, Elhert said. That's especially true when talking about child care staffing issues, she said. One bill, for example, asked that child care providers be reimbursed at the 50th percentile for child care assistance. That will have little impact because it's being done for some of the regulated child care categories, and federal guidance calls for reimbursement at the 75th percentile, Elhurst said. Another bill, H.F. 6, addressed Iowa's Teach and Wage program. As chairwoman of the Early Childhood Workforce Advisory Committee and a TEACH recipient, Elhurst monitors both programs. The bill doesn't provide funding but sets up a new structure that she said would create some difficulties for program participants. Our next article, Ernst, Second Impeachment of Trump is Not Constitutional, by Aaron Murphy, Lee Des Moines Bureau, Des Moines. Iowa U.S. Senator Joni Ernst said Tuesday she does not believe the second impeachment trial of former President Donald Trump is constitutional. Nonpartisan legal analysis from a congressional research group concluded not only is the impeachment of a former president constitutional, but some scholars have deemed it an, quote, an essential option, end quote. Trump, a Republican, has been impeached a second time by the Democrat-controlled U.S. House, this time for his role in inciting and failing to quell a January 6 riot at the U.S. Capitol that left 5 dead, including a U.S. Capitol police officer. The impeachment trial in the Senate is scheduled to begin the week of February 8th. Ernst, also a Republican, told reporters Tuesday that after reading scholars who have presented arguments on, quote, both sides, end quote, she does not believe the Senate has the constitutional authority to convict a former president in an impeachment trial. Later Tuesday, Ernst supported a motion in the Senate to dismiss the latest impeachment charges. Quote, I'll continue to listen to the legal scholars and understand the pros and cons, but right now I do believe it is unconstitutional, end quote, Ernst said during a conference call with Iowa reporters. Iowa Republican U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley also voted to dismiss the impeachment charges. He said Tuesday that he believes the constitutional question remains unanswered. He said the U.S. Constitution outlines impeachment for the president or other elected officers and does not specifically address former presidents. Quote, I'm not a lawyer, so it seems to me to be a reasonable argument, end quote, Grassley said Tuesday during a conference call with Iowa reporters. Quote, but I'm going to listen to the constitutional lawyers speak about that. I think it's going to be thoroughly debated during the impeachment trial as well by both sides, end quote. According to the nonpartisan Congressional Research Service, most constitutional scholars believe Congress has the authority to impeach elected officials who are no longer in office. According to a January 15th report from the Congressional Research Service, quote, the Constitution does not directly address whether Congress may impeach and try a former president for actions taken while in office. Though the text is open to debate, it appears that most scholars who have closely examined the question have concluded that Congress has authority to extend the impeachment process to officials who are no longer in office, end quote. The legal analysis also says scholars have noted if impeachment does not extend to elected officials who are no longer in office, an important aspect of impeachment, the ability to bar an individual from holding office in the future, is lost. Quote, if impeachment does not apply to former officials, then Congress could never bar an official from holding office in the future as long as that individual resigns first, the analysis says. According to one scholar, it is essential for Congress to have authority to impeach and convict former officials in order to apply the punishment of disqualification. Otherwise, Congress's jurisdiction would depend on the whim of the individual who engaged in misconduct, end quote. Ernst said if Trump is guilty of any crimes, he can be held accountable in the courts. Quote, I think it's really important that we focus on what is our role as Congress and what is the role of the Senate. That's only one avenue, Ernst said. If the president is truly guilty of something else, we have remedies through the courts for that. So if there truly is a case there, he can still be held accountable, end quote. Our next article, Winter Storm Slams Midwest, by Josh Funk, Associated Press, Omaha, Nebraska. A major winter storm dumped more than a foot of snow on parts of the middle of the country, while another system blanketed parts of the southwest with snow, disrupting travel for a second consecutive day Tuesday and shuttering many schools. There were closures of several coronavirus testing sites on Monday and Tuesday in Nebraska and Iowa. In both states, saw 12 to 15 inches of snow in places. At least 4 inches of snow was expected through through Tuesday across most of an area stretching from central Kansas northeast to Chicago and southern Michigan. National Weather Service meteorologist Taylor Nicolaisen, who is based near Omaha, Nebraska, said up to 15 inches was reported in spots between York, Nebraska, and Des Moines, Iowa. He said it's uncommon for the region to get more than a foot of snow from a single storm, and it has been decades since some cities saw this much. Quote, a lot of people tend to misremember snow events, especially from when you were a kid. Everything felt like a foot of snow when you were a kid, and quote, Nicolaisen said, quote, the snow drifts were literally higher than your head when you were a kid, but that's because you were 2.5 feet tall, end quote. The storm made travel treacherous in places as wind whipped snow piled up. Interstates were temporarily closed in western Nebraska and in Wisconsin near Milwaukee because of crashes Tuesday morning, and scores of flights were canceled at airports across the region. Officials urged drivers to stay off the roads. In Wisconsin, the Weather Service predicted up to 10 inches of snow could fall in the Milwaukee area, with the highest totals along Lake Michigan. Wind gusts of 15 miles per hour to 25 miles per hour were reported across southern Wisconsin, creating drifting snow, reduced visibilities, and complicating snow removal efforts, said Andy Boxwell, a meteorologist with the Weather Service office in Sullivan, Wisconsin. Quote, it's not only snow, but it's pretty darn windy out there, so that's causing a lot of blowing and drifting, end quote, he said. We've got some letters to the editor. The post-Trump work won't come easy. Our democracy will survive Trump, but it didn't come easy. The inauguration was upbeat as it should be, and without the creator of our nation's woes, Trump did not have the guts or the humility to be there, as other losing presidents have. The inauguration was positive, perfect, secure, and beautiful, and not about just one man. We were a country again. Trump will never admit to failure in losing this election, but we will survive this country's Trump dive and thrive again if we stay together as one, undivided and determined. Trump still lies, cries, and whines, but he must pay for his crimes as well as his enablers. He will probably never do time, and I am running out of rhyme, but I will roll the dice and say, quote, he will pay a heavy price, maybe more than twice or thrice, end quote. As the Glen Campbell song goes, quote, he's gone, 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 and crying won't bring him back. And more that he cries, the faster Air Force One flies down to his Mar-a-Lago shack, end quote. Americans may have, quote, differences, end quote, but we also must have, quote, difference, end quote, and pull together for the common good and welfare of all Americans. Joe Biden, honest, experienced, dedicated, and he and his administration are ready to go to work. Relief at last, but it will be a tough task. Republicans had better help and learn. From Steve Epperly, Mason City. Smith shows contempt for fellow citizen. In response to the opinion piece with the very large headline on the January 20th opinion page by editor J.C. Smith, quote, whither Christie Tass goes, so goes half the nation, end quote. I agree with Smith when she says, quote, America isn't injured, it's poisoned by the hate and lies, end quote. What she and I may disagree on is who is the author of that hate and those lies. The real canary in the coal mine is when any person's views are arbitrarily discounted and dismissed. In this case called, quote, fantasy, end quote, by Smith, what happened to civil discourse, Smith suggests that Tass, a Trump supporter, cannot be trusted to distinguish, quote, between truth and fantasy, end quote. But Smith can. She attacks the faith of Tass, surmising that she will feel her God has abandoned her. Tass does not. The, quote, impossible, end quote, that she believes is that there is still a way to save this constitutional republic and that America has a God-given mission to fulfill. At this writing, people who responded online to the opinion piece have called Tass, quote, ignorant, religious fool, lying fool, hateful cultist, traitor to our democracy, delusional, careless, and a liar, end quote. She had already received death threats for asserting her right to free speech. After World War II, a common expression was, quote, I don't agree with what you say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it, end quote. And we have turned that on its head. Shouting someone down, public humiliation, and name-calling is not debate. The Globe-Gazette should be ashamed to be the vehicle of such contempt, ridicule, and hatred towards a fellow citizen. I am Christie Tass, and so, as Editor Smith reminds us, is half the nation. And that was from Rosemary Byron Yoki of Mason City, unity as prescribed in the Bible. Quote, behold how good and how pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity. It is like the precious ointment poured on the head that ran down on the beard of Aaron. It is like the dew of Mount Hermon and the dew that comes on the hills of Zion. For there the Lord has commanded the blessing, even life forevermore. End quote. David in Psalm 133. USA, united we stand, divided we fall. And that was from Irma Peterson, Mason City. And lastly, prosecute every Capitol rioter, every single individual who participated in the U.S. Capitol insurrection on January 6th must be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. It doesn't matter how great or small their participation was, for each one of them has blood on their hands. They are quislings and traitors. Meghan McCain didn't mince words when she said on the quote, The View, end quote, the day after the insurrection that these people were, quote, bastards and scum of the earth, end quote. If the shoe fits, wear it. And that came from Kevin Young of Sheffield. Moving to the obituaries, Eric Lee Bales, Mason City. Eric Lee Bales, 54, of Mason City, died Thursday, December 24th, 2020, at Mercy One North Iowa Medical Center in Mason City. A private family memorial service will be held Saturday, January 30th, 2021, at Hogan at Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel, 126 3rd Street, Northeast Mason City, with Jared Nassif officiating. A public visitation will be held from 10 to 11 a.m. Saturday at Hogan at Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel. All contributions to the Eric Bales Memorial may be sent to Ken Bales, 16 North Willow Green Court, Mason City, Iowa, 50401. Eric was born at Fairfax County Hospital in Fairfax, Virginia, on May 15, 1966. He was the third son of Joan and Kenneth Bales. After moving from Virginia, Eric attended Clear Lake Schools, where he later graduated. He was an outstanding long-distance runner for Clear Lake, which included cross-country in the 1600-millimeter and 2300-millimeter races in track. Eric had a natural gift for long-distance running and achieved many awards. Following high school graduation, Eric attended North Iowa Area Community College for 1 year before entering the workforce. Upon that decision, Eric pursued a career as a semi-truck driver. He worked for many companies, including most recently for Ruin Trucking Company and Caledonia Haulers out of Caledonia, Minnesota. When Eric was not working, he loved spending time with his children, grandchildren, friends, and relatives. He also shared a passion for firearms as he was part of the National Rifle Association and a great interest in riding his motorcycle with his closest friends. Eric had a knack for mechanical repair and could always be counted on to fix just about anything. Those left to cherish Eric's memories are his father, Kenneth Bales, and Ken's companion, Kay Steger of Mason City, children Alex and Raina Bales of Des Moines, Iowa, grandchildren Riverly and Emerson Bales, brother Ryan, spouse Patty Bales of Vacaville, California, sister-in-law Diane Bales, Fleurgard of Buckner, Missouri, uncles Robert, spouse Karen Bales of Clear Lake, Iowa, and Robert, spouse Leah Speaker of Clear Lake, and many nieces, nephews, and cousins throughout several states. He was preceded in death by his mother, Joan Bales, and older brother Brad Bales, Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel, 126 3rd Street, Northeast Mason City, 641-423-2372, colonialchapels.com. Ralph James Schaefer, Mason City. Ralph James Schaefer, 89, of Mason City, died on Saturday, January 23rd, 2021, at his home. Ralph was born March 24th, 1931, in Grand Junction, Iowa, to Carl and Pearl Cox Schaefer. His family moved to Nora Springs, Portland area, where they farmed until 1944 or 45, when they moved to Mason City. Ralph was a Mason City High School graduate. For 3 years, Ralph served in the Army as a certified truck mechanic. He was stationed in Fort Riley, Kansas, Guam, Japan, and Camp McCoy, Wisconsin. Ralph and Dixie were married in 1954 and went on to enjoy family life. Their travels include trips to Las Vegas, Colorado, Florida, Hawaii, and Europe. Ralph was a supervisor foreman at Lee Cement Plant, retiring in June 1992 after 32-plus years of service. Everyone liked Ralph. He was a kind, gentle, caring, understanding, compassionate man with a very positive attitude toward life. His moral upbringing always compelled him to do the right thing. He couldn't have told a lie if his life depended on it. Ralph was an exemplary man of high integrity and good character, a true role model and an inspiration to all. He accepted life's challenges with a positive attitude, strength, courage, and perseverance right up to the end of his life. Ralph loved life and had many interests. His number one interest and top priority was always family. He thoroughly enjoyed dining out with his family as well as weekly Wednesday morning breakfasts with his brothers. On holidays and special occasions, Ralph always gave Dixie a dozen red roses and an exceptionally beautiful card. When selecting her card, he never looked at the price. He said that a price could not be placed on his love for Dixie. In earlier years, he enjoyed hunting, fishing, and working on cars. He was the proud owner of a 1940 Chevy and enjoyed taking the family on Sunday rides. Dancing with Dixie was one of Ralph's pleasures. They attended many dances together. Ralph spent hours in his woodworking shop, usually working on a project for a family member. Ralph was able to fix anything. He had the analytical ability to diagnose the problem, the creative ability to design the fix, and the physical skill to implement the fix, which often involved making parts. If Ralph couldn't fix it, it was unfixable. For years, Ralph served as a board member of the Lee Credit Union. He was a lifetime member of the VFW and Disabled Veterans. In 1994, Ralph received the Governor's Volunteer Award, recognizing his outstanding volunteer efforts for the North Iowa Community Action Organization Head Start Program. Ralph donated many hours to construct the new Head Start Playground at 315th Street, Northeast in Mason City, Iowa. Ralph was preceded in death by his parents, Carl and Pearl Schaefer, sister Lila, spouse Walker Atkinson, brothers Ray, spouse Wilma Schaefer, and Frank Schaefer. He is survived by his wife, Dixie, and daughters, Sherry of Mason City, Peggy Davis, and Glennis Schaefer of Mason City, brothers George, Joe, and David, spouse Alma Schaefer, sister-in-law Janice, spouse Frank Schaefer, uncle Clifton, spouse Charlene Cox, grandchildren Jim Barkema, Jason Weitzel, Michael Weitzel, Afton Weitzel, Waite, great-grandchildren Dakota Weitzel, Drake Waite, Kavaya Weitzel, Alec Barkema, Madison Ian Weitzel, Keaton Weitzel, great-great-grandson Kaysen Kedwig, many nieces and nephews, and his special feline friend Buddy. A funeral service will be held on Friday, January 29th, 2021 at 1:30 p.m. at Major Erickson Funeral Home, 111 North Pennsylvania. Visitation will be held on Thursday, January 28th, 2021 from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at the funeral home. Interment will be at Elmwood St. Joseph Cemetery. Arrangements are with Major Erickson Funeral Home and Crematory, 111 North Pennsylvania Avenue, Mason City, Iowa, 50401, 641-423-0924, www.majorericksonfuneralhome.com. David Duane Hopper, Clear Lake. David Duane Hopper, 70, of Clear Lake, passed away Monday, January 25th, 2021, at Mercy One North Iowa Hospice from complications of a nearly 20-year battle with Parkinson's disease. He was 70 years old and had lived life to the fullest. A celebration of life will be held for the immediate family at Galilean Lutheran Church on Sunday, January 31st, 2021, with Pastor Melinda Mikulski officiating. The service will be live-streamed on the Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel Facebook page and posted to David's tribute page at www.colonialchapels.com. Following the service, please check their website for the obituary and details. Burial will be at Memorial Park Cemetery in Mason City. The family suggests memorials may be directed to the Michael J. Fox Parkinson's Research Foundation, Galilean Lutheran Church, or a memorial of your choice. Condolences may be sent to the family at 2416 North Shore Drive, Clear Lake, Iowa. David was born November 5th, 1950, to Richard and Marjorie Taylor Hopper and grew up in Ventura. He was baptized organized at Redemir Lutheran Church in Ventura. During his school years, he was in Boy Scouts, ran track, played the drums, and was chosen for the Doran Music Festival. When he was 14, he started working at the local fishing resort, Castor's Cove, and worked there through high school and college years. He graduated from Ventura High School in 1969. He attended Iowa State University, majoring in landscape architecture. It was there he met his wife, Linda Hansen Hopper. They were married August 6, 1972 at St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Thornton, Iowa. During college years, Dave participated in the Barshi Dance Troupe, which did the opening performance for C.Y. Stevens Auditorium at Iowa State University. He graduated in 1973 and then began work at Hoskins Landscaping in Des Moines, where he worked for 5 years. On February 16, 1976, their daughter Annalisa Marie Hopper Minor was born. In 1978, they moved to a family homestead east of Clear Lake, where they started and operated Natural Plus Nursery for over 35 years. January 28, 1979, their son David Matthew Hopper was born. Dave was well known for his gift of landscaping, design, and installation. He did work all over North Iowa and made many friends along the way. He did projects throughout the area such as Mercy Medical Center, NIACC, and many other commercial and residential projects. One of his most notable projects was designing and building the wall in East Park adjacent to the Cannonball Train. Over the years, Dave volunteered for numerous organizations and was heavily invested in his community. He was a Boy Scout leader, hospice volunteer, volunteered in the schools, was on the Clear Lake School Board, was a Mason City Mohawk hockey team rep, volunteered at Galilean Lutheran Church, was a CASA volunteer, and coached many youth sports teams. In 2011, he received the Governor's Volunteer Award. Dave retired from the business in 2015 due to health reasons, and at that time, his son, David, and wife, Mary, moved to the farm and took over the business. One of the family's best memories was their annual summer vacations to Hiawatha Beach Resort at Leech Lake, where the family has gone for over 40 years. He was loved by and especially proud of his family. One of his favorite things in life was watching his grandchildren's activities. He will be remembered most for his gentle and kind spirit. He was a man of few words and had a heart of gold. He was beloved by his wife of 48 years, Linda Hopper of Clear Lake, his two children, Annalisa, spouse Corey Minor of Mason City, Iowa, and David Matthew, spouse Mary Hopper of Clear Lake, and grandchildren at Sierra Minor, Corey David Minor, Holton Hopper, and Clara Hopper. He is also survived by siblings Richard, spouse Connie Hopper of Wallingford, Iowa, and Carolyn, spouse Greg Knopp of Nevada, brother-in-law Bennett K. Hansen of Ankeny, sister-in-law Sonja Hansen of Ankeny, as well as many nieces, nephews, and lifelong friends. He was preceded in death by his parents, Richard and Marjorie Hopper, and infant grandson, David Holton Hopper. Ward Van Slyke Colonial Chapel, 310 First Avenue North, Clear Lake, 641-357-2193, colonialchapels.com. Ruth Ann Wellscott. Ruth Ann Wellscott passed away on Friday, January 22, 2021 at Banner Boswell Medical Center in Sun City, Arizona, the result of COVID-19. She was born May 24, 1947 to Harold and Pearl Hesse Wellscott in Grand Haven, Michigan. She graduated from Spring Lake High School in 1965 and from Hope College in 1969 with a secondary education degree. She taught high school students at Annville Institute in Annville, Kentucky, then moved to Albuquerque, New Mexico in 1974 to pursue her career as a case management counselor for National Rehab Company. While in New Mexico, she earned her master's degree in rehab counseling at the University of New Mexico. She retired in 1997 due to post-polio syndrome from the polio she contracted in 1952. After retirement, she traveled in an RV for 19 years, seeing the USA and finding her genealogical roots. She was a member of the First Presbyterian Church of Sun City and volunteered for many activities there. During retirement, she also volunteered at the Sun City Visitors Center for 12 years, was a member of the Camera Guild of Sun City and the Computer Club of Sun City, and recently was a member of the Sun City Posse Volunteering and Dispatch. She is survived by Karen Marquardt Blakewell, together for 46 years, and Karen's children, who she helped raise, Randy, spouse Anita Jurgens, and Carol Hugo of Iowa and Lori Blackfish of Nebraska, brothers Richard, spouse Mary Lynn Wellscott, and Roger, spouse Mary Jo Wellscott of Michigan, Karen's brother Roy, spouse Patty Mark Wart, and sister-in-law Letha Mark Wart of Iowa, Karen's 10 grandchildren and many great-grandchildren, and several nieces and nephews. She was preceded in death by her parents and Karen's daughter Lonnie Jurgens, brother Keith Mark Wart, and grandson. Burial will be in the Spring Lake Township Cemetery. A celebration of life will be held in Arizona at a later date. Please sign the family's online guestbook at www.systemafh.com. David A. Backus, Ventura. David A. Backus, 73, of Ventura, Iowa, passed away Friday, January 22, 2021, at Mercy One at North Iowa Medical Center in Mason City, Iowa. A memorial visitation will be held from 3 to 6 p.m. Thursday, January 28, 2021, at Caudado Funeral Chapel, 160 East 4th Street, Gardner, Iowa. Due to COVID-19, a celebration of service will be held at a later date at the Clear Lake United Methodist Church. In lieu of flowers, memorials are preferred of in memory to Dave to Central Gardens of North Iowa, Mayo Clinic, or Young America's Foundation. Caudado Funeral Home, 641-923-2841, www.caudadofuneralhome.com. Norman Edward Holm. Norman Edward Holm, 75, of Hampton, Iowa, passed away Monday, January 25th, 2021, at his home in Hampton, with his family by his side. He was born on February 5th, 1945, in Hampton, to Norman Thygeson and Shirley Marie Watson Holm. Norm is survived by his loving wife of 54 years, Eileen Holm of Hampton, son Michael, spouse Heather Holm of Hampton, son Robert, spouse Christine Holm of Ames, grandson Logan Holm, spouse Julissa Garcia, grandson Kyler Holm, and grandson Curtison Holm. He was preceded in death by his parents, Norman and Shirley. Memorial contributions may be directed to Norm's family for future disbursement. A memorial service will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, January 29th, 2021, at First Congregational United Church of Christ in Hampton, with burial in the St. John Lutheran Cemetery, Rural Coulter. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday, January 28, 2021, at First Congregational United Church of Christ in Hampton. Those in attendance should wear a mask and practice social distancing. The Siestema Vogel Funeral Home of Hampton is assisting Norm's family. Friends and family will also have the opportunity to join Norm's service virtually via Zoom on Friday at 10 a.m. Douglas E. Stunkin. Douglas E. Stunkin, 54, of Garner, passed away Monday, January 25, 2021, at Pearl Valley Rehabilitation and Healthcare Center in Perry, Iowa. A public visitation will be held 4 p.m. until 7 p.m. Friday, January 29, 2021, at the Siestema Vogel Funeral Home in Hampton. Those in attendance are required to wear a mask and practice social distancing at all times. Private family services will be held. Burial will take place in the Hampton Cemetery. The Siestema Vogel Funeral Home of Hampton is assisting Doug's family. Moving to sports prep roundup, Four Cities Miller propels Indians senior scores 1,000th point in team's 10th victory by Shane Lance, Globe Gazette. The Four City boys basketball team defeated North Union on Monday night by a 59-25 score as senior Noah Miller etched his name in school history. In the course of the lopsided win, Miller scored his 100th career point, becoming only the 7th place in the school history to reach that mark. Miller finished with 15 points on the night with three three-pointers, and also dished out a team-high 6 assists. Senior Andrew Snyder had a team-high 8 rebounds. After a dominant offensive showing in the first quarter, the Indians held a 37-6 halftime lead over the Warriors, and then outscored them in the second half, 22-19, to seal the win. The victory was Four City's 5th in a row and made them 10-6 on the season. The Indians will play on Friday night at West Hancock. Boys basketball, Charles City 78, OCH 58. The Charles City boys basketball team extended its winning streak to 3 games with a 78-58 victory at home over Osage on Monday night. The Comets offense was hot from the start with 26 points in the first quarter and 21 in the second to take 47-29 halftime lead. In the second half, Charles City outscored the Green Devils 31-29 to secure the 20-point victory. Sophomore Chase Lowe led Charles City with 18 points on 8 of 12 shooting, while senior Caden Berry was close behind with 16, including 4 3-pointers. Lowe had a double-double in the game as he also finished with 12 rebounds. For Osage, senior Eric Bobinette led the way with 14 points and 6 rebounds. Freshman Max Cundinson put up 14 points with 3 3-pointers. With the win, Charles City improves to 6-7, while Osage fell to 10-5. The Green Devils will host North Butler on Tuesday night, while Charles City will host Decorum. West Hancock 62, Eagle Grove 31. The West Hancock boys crushed Eagle Grove on Monday night 62-31 as the Eagles of Britt snagged their third straight victory. West Hancock scored 17 points in the first quarter and 24 in the second to take a 41-15 halftime lead and then held on for the win by outscoring Eagle Grove in the second half 21-16. Junior Braden Walk scored a team-high 11 points while senior Tanner Thompson pulled in 7 rebounds. Thompson and senior Kaysen Barnes both had 5 assists in the game. The win boosted West Hancock to 7-9, while Eagle Grove fell to 0-16. West Hancock will host North Iowa on Tuesday night. Girls basketball, Osage 59, Charles City 30. The Osage girls extended their winning streak to 12 games with a 59-30 victory over Charles City on Monday night. After a competitive first quarter where the Green Devils got out to a slim 17-15 lead, Osage dominated the rest of the game. The Green Devils outscored the Comets over the final 3 quarters by a 42-15 margin. No stats were available from the game. With the win, Osage improved to 14-1, while Charles City record fell to 2-13. The Green Devils will host North Butler on Tuesday, while the Comets will play at Decorah. Northwood Kensett 53, North Iowa 27. The Northwood Kensett girls earned a decisive victory on Monday night over North Iowa as the Vikings beat the winless Bison 53-27. With the win, the Vikings improve 5-9, while North Iowa falls 0-15. Northwood Kensett will play Thursday at Central Springs. Forest City 57, North Union 35. A trio of hot offense performers for the Indians gave Forest City a 57-35 win over North Union on Monday night. Junior Shea Delavue led the way for Forest City with 17 points on 8 of 12 shooting, while senior Ellie Kaler had 14 points with a pair of threes. Senior Kaylee Miller put up a double-double with 13 points and 14 rebounds and tied with Delavue for the team lead with 5 assists. The Indians improved 12-5 on the season and are scheduled to play Waverly Shell Rock on Tuesday night, pending weather. West Hancock 62, Eagle Grove 25. The West Hancock girls won their third consecutive game with a 62-25 win over Eagle Grove on Tuesday night. Playing their third straight game with top-scoring senior Rachel Lear, the rest of the Eagles' offense stepped up. Junior Kennedy Kelly led the team with 24 points with 6 three-pointers on the night, while junior Scout Johannesson and freshman Mallory Lear had 11 and 10 points, respectively. Junior Leah Atchison had a team-high 7 rebounds. With the win, West Hancock is now 14-2 and will host a 0-15 North Iowa on Tuesday. Swimming, Mason City 57, Spencer 37. The Mason City swimming team came out with a win in its final dual meet of the season on Monday night as the Mohawks beat Spencer 57-37. Trevor Torkelson earned wins in the 200 free and 100 fly with respective times of 1:54.05 and 56.64. Daniel Schwartz also had a pair of wins with a time of 2:26.98 in the 200 IM and a 100 breaststroke time of 1:11.05. The Mohawks' next meet will come February 6 when the team competes at the district state qualifying meet in Fort Dodge. Our next article, Top of Iowa Tourney featured great rivalries. 8 of 14 matches had 2 ranked wrestlers competing, by Gunnar Davis, Globe Gazette. The Top of Iowa Wrestling Tournament on Saturday at Osage featured plenty of talent. The 16-team conference had 20 ranked wrestlers, 3 ranked teams, and many returning state qualifiers from a season ago competing at the tournament. On top of that, 8 of the 14 championship matches featured 2 ranked wrestlers battling head-to-head for the conference Barnes title. Because of this, Saturday's championship round was a treat to watch for wrestling fans alike. At 182 pounds, the potential of a matchup between OCH senior Spencer Mooberry and Lake Mills senior Elijah Wagner had many excited. A match between Mooberry, a returning state runner-up ranked number 2 in Class 2A, and Wagner, the number 2 ranked wrestler in 1A and returning state medalist, surely wouldn't disappoint. And as the day went on, the bracket started shaping up. Mooberry was eager for the opportunity. Quote, "We were supposed to wrestle 2 times before this and they both got canceled, so I was excited for this one today," end quote, Mooberry said. Quote, "He was a great competitor. It's always fun putting it on the line against someone like that," end quote. From the opening whistle, it was tightly contested as the two were evenly matched. Both were careful not to make mistakes, but Mooberry was able to score the first and only points with a takedown to earn a 2-0 decision over Wagner. For Mooberry, the title was his 3rd consecutive at the top of Iowa wrestling at tournament, but he wasn't satisfied with his performance, even though he admitted Wagner is a great opponent. Quote, "I've just got to be able to open up a little bit more, score a few more points. I wish him the best of luck at the state tournament," Mooberry said. "I mean, it's awesome to get a win. This is my 3rd conference title, and I am appreciative for that, but I like scoring more points and being a bit more dominant," end quote. Luckily for both wrestlers, Saturday's tournament is the last time they'll meet on the mat. They can't be said at the 220-pound weight division. West Hancock senior Cole Kelly ranked number 7 in St. Agnes. Senior Sage Holscheiser, ranked number 8, had unfinished business at Saturday's meet. The pair had wrestled earlier in the year when Kelly scored a win in a decision over Holscheiser, but Holscheiser didn't wrestle for much of his junior season due to injury and had been slowly gaining his confidence back during the early part of his senior campaign. Outside of the in-season past, there was a bit of family history hanging in the balance. Quote, "My dad and his uncle used to wrestle when they were in high school too," Holscheiser said. "I have a lot of respect for him. He's a good guy," end quote. Holscheiser took a 1-0 lead after 2 periods of the championship match, but the 3rd period is where Kelly went to work, scoring all 5 of his points in a 5-2 decision. Quote, "Things that are going to make you better are the harder matches," Kelly said. "The ones that end in the 1st period, they don't help you out to get better conditioning. It's just a little confidence booster seeing it that my stuff works and that I can survive all 6 minutes," end quote. Even though Holscheiser lost in a close match, he was still encouraged from the result and said he wrestled better the 2nd time around. Kelly, a returning state medalist, knows the caliber of wrestler it takes to get to the state tournament at Wells Fargo Arena. Even though Holscheiser hasn't been to Des Moines in his career, Kelly wouldn't be surprised to see him there. Quote, "He's a good athlete and I can see him definitely making it down to state," Kelly said. "He goes all 6 minutes and it's not like he lets up by any means. He has the stuff that works," end quote. And who knows, maybe the two will meet up again at the well. Quote, "Anything's possible," end quote, Kelly added. And our last sports article, prep boys basketball. Lake Mills ranked number 2 in latest AP poll. Bulldogs have won 13 straight games to start the season by Shane Lance Globe Gazette. With 13 straight wins to open the season, the Lake Mills boys basketball team has proven that it is one of the state's best Class 1A teams, and they are getting noticed. The Bulldogs are currently ranked number 2 in the Class 1A in the latest Associated Press boys basketball poll, behind only 15-0 North Lynn. Lake Mills is one of 3 area teams to receive consideration in the latest rankings, as Clear Lake came in at number 10 in Class 3A, while Garner Hayfield Ventura received 1 vote in the Class 2A poll. Class 1A, number 1, North Lynn, Troy Mills, 15-0. Number 2, Lake Mills, 13-0. Since its 46-42 win over Garner Hayfield Ventura on December 18th, the team's closest win of the season, the Bulldogs have destroyed any team unlucky enough to cross their path. Over the past 6 games, Lake Mills has won by an average of 34.83 points. Lake Mills has 3 players with over 160 points on the season, led by senior Deshaun Lennon with 252. The Bulldogs have only 6 games left in the regular season. Once the postseason hits, they are a team with a legitimate shot to go all the way. Number 3, Martinsdale St. Mary's, 13-0. Number 4, Easton Valley, 15-0. Number 5, Galen Catholic, 14-1. Number 6, Springfield, 15-1. Number 7, Montezuma, 13-2. Number 8, Grandview Christian, 12-1. Number 9, St. Mary's Ramson, 13-1. And number 10, Wapsie Valley, 11-2. Class 2A. Number 1, Boyden Hall, 14-0. Number 2, AHSTW, 14-1. Number 3, Des Moines Christian, 12-1. Number 4, Western Christian, 12-3. Number 5, Dyke New Hartford, 12-1. Tie West Branch with 9-0. Number 7, OABCIG, 13-1. Number 8, Denver, 12-2. Number 9, Penkin, 14-1. And number 10, Roland Story, 11-1. Others receiving votes: Garner Hayfield Ventura, 1 vote. Though they are one of the most complete and competitive teams in North Iowa, the Cardinals have the misfortune of being in the same conference as Lake Mills, and so the 12-3 team sits in second place. A 3-point loss to Forest City last Thursday bumped the team from top 10 consideration, but with a starting lineup that consists of 5 seniors who can all lead the offense on any given night, the Cardinals have high hopes for the postseason. The team is looking for its first state tournament appearance since 2017. And Class 3A, number 1, Ballard, 11-1. Number 2, Pella, 11-1. Number 3, Monticello, 12-0. Number 4, Dallas Center Grimes, 11-1. Number 5, Carroll, 12-1. Number 6, Assumption, 10-2, tied with Saloon at 13-1. Number 8, Epworth, Western Dubuque, 10-2. Number 9, Glenwood, 12-2. And number 10, Clear Lake, 11-1. Clear Lake has won 9 straight games, but fell 1 spot in the rankings this week as Glenwood jumped from number 10 to number 9. Junior Carson Toby and Andrew Formank continue to dominate the points column for the Lions, with 203 and 201 on the season. Toby leads the team with 32 three-pointers, while Formank has 158 rebounds, by far the most on the team. In any playoff situation, it is often the hottest team that does the best. With a winning streak that has now lasted over a month and a half, the Lions are one of the hottest teams out there. For our political cartoon today, we have a crossword puzzle that has some words filled in and a pen sitting on top of the crossword puzzle. The pen says executive orders. And some of the words in here are laws, accomplishment, legacy, regulations, policies, Obama legacy, Trump, Biden. The words Obama and Trump are crossed out. Briefly, family separations. The Justice Department on Tuesday rescinded a Trump-era memo that established a, quote, zero tolerance, end quote, enforcement policy for migrants crossing the U.S.-Mexico border illegally, which resulted in thousands of family separations. Senate, easing off a stalemate, the Senate moved forward Tuesday with a power-sharing agreement in the evenly split chamber after Republican leader Mitch McConnell backed off his demand that Senate Democrats preserve the procedural tool known as the filibuster. Immigration, a federal judge on Tuesday issued a temporary restraining order sought by Texas barring the U.S. government from enforcing a 100-day deportation moratorium that is a key immigration priority of President Joe Biden. Church abuse. The Vatican on Monday cleared retired U.S. Bishop Joseph Hart of allegations he sexually abused minors and teenagers, rejecting lay experts' determination that a half a dozen claims were credible, and instead slapping him on the wrist for what it called, quote, flagrant and, quote, imprudent behavior. Internet outage. Internet users across the Northeast U.S. experienced widespread outages for several hours Tuesday, interrupting work and school because of an unspecified Verizon network issue. People posted on Twitter reporting having issues connecting with various online services in the region stretching from Washington to Boston. Middle East. U.S. President Joe Biden's administration announced Tuesday it will restore relations with the Palestinians and renew aid to Palestinian refugees, a reversal of the Trump administration's cutoff and key element of its new support for a two-state solution to the decades-old conflict between Israelis and Palestinians. And that does it for today's reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for Wednesday, January 27th on Iris. I'm your reader, Aaron. You can access today's reading online at iowaradioreading.org. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you have a wonderful day.